The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Seal and I'm joined today by Lucy Dunn and Isabel Harpen. Now, over the bank holiday weekend, the big political news was the introduction on Monday of the new Scottish Hate Crime Act. Lucy, tell us about the reaction since that legislation came into effect yesterday.
So the Hate Crime and Public Order Bill came in yesterday, implemented after being in the works for about 4 years, was when it was first introduced, was March 2020. It came in on April Fool's Day, which did cause amusement in some quarters, but on a less flippant note, certainly there's a lot of concern, and we can see it across social media, but across the country more generally, about what this will mean for freedom of speech and free debate, and particularly for certain types of groups, particularly gender-critical feminists. There's people that are looking at the language that is being used in this bill, saying that it's quite vague and really lowers the thresholds for the police to investigate reports of hate crimes. It talks about people committing offences that a reasonable person might consider to be threatening, abusive or insulting, and might be found to be intending to stir up hatred. It's all quite loose language, and particularly with the trans activist versus the gender critical feminist debate, there are concerns that vexatious complaints will be made, will be put in to kind of essentially put one over on people that have a slightly different point of view. And we've certainly seen this worry expressed across Twitter and social media over the last 24 hours.
And I suppose also it's no longer really a bubble story, as Humza used to refer to it last week. The fact that Ali McCoy has come out and criticised it today would surely suggest that it's going to be not just something that we think of as a kind of niche constitutional political issue. It's going to actually be something that voters are quite concerned about, particularly, of course, given all the challenges facing Scotland in terms of public services.
Well, absolutely. And I think one of the biggest issues here is about the poor use of police resources. You know, we've seen over the last couple of months that Police Scotland have said they're not going to investigate certain types of minor crimes, particularly, you know, if this is a burglary that happened without CCTV footage of a burglar going into someone's house or garden, that's not going to be investigated anymore. But yet every single report that's made under this hate crime bill will be investigated. And we've had senior figures from the police saying that they don't actually have extra resources to cope with this expected influx of hate crime complaints. And it's something that I suppose is quite a concerning move. Some people are saying, particularly as Police Scotland already isn't performing at the level people would like to see it at. And they're saying that undertrained and overwhelmed police might actually enact this law in a way that will put people at risk for simply saying things within their own homes, never mind in public spaces as well. So I think it's a lot of concern, and there's a lot of vagueness still around that language.
Isabel, I was recently rereading your excellent book in which you talk about pointless legislation and basically politicians recriminalising things that already are criminal offence, such as, for instance, I think in this case, a lot of this legislation was covered by the 1986 Public Order Act, I believe, in terms of criminalising racial hatred. So I just wondered, perhaps, what do you make of this whole row, Isabel? And I suppose we're waiting for the first prosecution under it.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Thank you very much for the book plug, James. Always appreciated. Now in its second edition. This is one of those things a bit like with the Gender Recognition Act that Holyrood passed, which was a Nicola Sturgeon project, that Humza Yousaf has really tied himself personally to in terms of defending and in terms of dismissing the arguments made by opponents of this legislation. And I think it's one of those things, again, that is very divisive within Scotland. So it's one of those habits that the SNP have of trying to suggest that no one could possibly disagree with them who is reasonable. But I think if you talk to people, certainly when I talk to people locally, they bring it up spontaneously and are quite upset and confused by what this really entails for them having opinions on matters that actually aren't settled in terms of public discussion, particularly. And, you know, it does often end up going back to gender identity and biological sex. But you know, those are the hot button issues that people want to be able to discuss without, as Lucy says, vexatious complaints flooding into the police to try to silence debate.
As Isabel says, she talked about Humza Yousaf and Nicola Sturgeon and making the comparisons between the gender reform bill that Nicola Sturgeon tried to bring in and the Hate Crime Act under Humza Yousaf. And there's certainly been questions about whether or not Humza sees this as being his legacy. And that's potentially, some people have suggested, why he has not perhaps listened to complaints in the way that some campaign groups would have liked him to. But interestingly, I think there's also a sort of party political slant on this too. There's been pushback from the UK Conservative Party in the form of Rishi Sunak making a comment about this last night. And this morning we've seen Douglas Ross on Twitter come out and say that the Scottish Tories do not support this hate crime bill. There's been quite a lot of silence though from Scottish Labour and the Scottish Liberal Democrats, interestingly, because they were the ones that, alongside the SNP and the Greens, did actually support this Hate Crime Act coming in the first place. And I think there's a sort of potential Labour split that we might see further down the line if Anna Sarwar, who did as an MSP at the time vote in favour of this bill, doesn't back down and make a U-turn in this. We've seen this morning that Pat McFadden on the morning round said that Labour isn't planning to introduce a similar bill for England and that JK Rowling shouldn't be arrested for the tweets that she's been making. And so there's a potential there that there might be a slight difference of opinion north and south of the border.
And we saw that previously with the gender recognition reform bill as well. Isabel, down south of the border, past Adrian's Wall, of course, in England, Rishi Sunak has been out today asking an answer, being answered the perennial favourite parlour game question of when the election's going to be, with a big sign behind him saying the word autumn in a school. He's been grilled today about his childcare plans, and Labour obviously are very keen to kind of present these as a failure, as being poorly implemented, and the Conservatives as weak on competence. Tell us more about this whole row and the framing of it.
Yeah, so he's as you say, he's been out and about in Hartlepool and was interviewed, pull clip by broadcasters. But what was really interesting was when he was then confronted in Hartlepool at a nursery by a mother who basically made the complaint that the early years sector have been making as a group about the childcare policy that Rishi Sunak has been out and about trying to sell. This week, parents of two-year-olds get 15 free hours of childcare a week during term time. And this has been mired in problems, whether it's sort of technical problems with the applications or the much wider problems that nurseries have been pointing out, which is that they don't have the staff or the places already to accommodate existing demand. And the government has just flooded the market with even more demand without dealing with the supply, which is a phrase that we could have used on so many different things, whether it's house building or childcare over the past decade. And this is the point that the mother made to the Prime Minister in this nursery, and we can hear a bit of it here.
And then also the fear is that, well, you're putting these systems in place that nurseries are struggling as well. So the fear is that we'll lose another nursery in the town because the system doesn't feel, or the certain the information is coming out that doesn't feel like the system is got the foundations right.
And I think this is really important because ties into a wider problem that the Prime Minister has, which is this week there are lots of good things that voters might, you know, in other conditions want to thank a government for. The national insurance cuts coming in at the weekend, this childcare policy, higher minimum wage. But actually, I don't think people really believe that they're actually overall benefiting from these policies. With the tax cut policy, the government did get a credit for this when it was announced in the autumn. They haven't got a credit from it when it was announced again for another 2 points in the budget. And the reason for that is that taxpayers suspect that they're being bribed with their own money, that at some point they're going to have to pay back in the form of tax rises after the election or spending cuts to public services that they're actually quite fond of and worried about. With childcare, look, if you are a parent of a nursery age child, and listeners do occasionally hear noises off in the podcast whenever I'm speaking from an aspiring 3.5-year-old broadcaster, you're very aware as a parent that the childcare sector, wherever you are in the country, is really struggling. And that, you know, parents, you know, are on waiting lists that are very, very long to get their children into any nursery, let alone the nursery that they want their children to go to. And so the idea that there's more funded hours will, I think, for most parents have been, well, I mean, this is going to be convenient for me, but is the nursery actually going to stay open? Because you have, in most parts of the country, nurseries abruptly closing because they cannot make the books stack up or they cannot get the staff. And this is the problem with the childcare policy is, you know, sure, this sounds like a nice giveaway, but is it actually going to work? And that's the problem that Rishi Sunak is encountering on a number of different policy fronts, where they should be really attractive retail offers, as we like to say in politics, but actually voters, they're not even looking at the small print because they know it by heart anyway. They know the problems with the sector in childcare, in housing, in tax and so on.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, Lucy. And thank you for listening to Coffee House Shots.